You're listening to WGBB Freeport. You're listening to AM 1240 or AM 1240 WGBB.com. You're listening to Dave's Gone By. You're obviously a very lonely person.
There goes the neighborhood.
The guy David Lefker is here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit bite!
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, 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 everyone, on this Sunday night, the first Sunday evening in June, June 1st, 2008, for the 275th edition of Dave's Gone. But I've been in this hot studio too long today. Let's try that again. 275 is the number. In Bloom is the title of this episode of Dave's Gone By. Why? Because we'll be celebrating the music and the fun of Charles Bloom, who is a songwriter of the Broadway theater kind of nature, also the cabaret club kind of nature, and a very good one, and a very talented one. If you've been listening to the pre-show for the past few minutes, you've heard a couple of his songs recorded by other people, including, I think, one, we even played one tune by him, which was kind of nice. But anyway, I mean, sung by him as well. So Charles Bloom is not just this talented theater composer, lyricist kind of guy. Oh, no. He is also someone I have kind of a friendship history with because we both went to NYU together and took a class together. Low must have been 22 to 24 years ago. We both took a directing class as students at NYU. He was going for a musical theater discipline. I was in the more film and television and theater non-musical discipline, but we intersected in the same class and kind of hit it off in a friendly, competitive talent sort of a way because we both knew we had different styles, but we both had some marginal level of skill on the stage. Marginal, but at least in my case, he was actually pretty good. I was just faking it, but faking it well. So we just, it was one of those things when you're two of the better people in a class, you gravitate towards each other because you make each other better, and you also recognize in the other person, aha, this is someone I can work with here, rather than sort of trying to be good and bring someone else up. This guy's going to bring me up, and that was kind of neat. Anyway, I bring all this up because Charles is going to be part of the program tonight in the studio on WGBB in the neighborhood on Dave's Gone By. Very happy about that, and we'll be playing some more of his music. And then towards the end of the show, leaving a little bit of time for some, just to say a nice fond farewell to a couple of folks that the creative world lost this week, Sidney Pollack and Harvey Korman. So stick around for Dave's Gone By. I think you will enjoy it. I hope you will. And certainly do it for our sponsors because they want your love. They need your business, and that's why they sponsor Dave's Gone By. Cool people like Jeff at Fancy Schmancy Balloons. Now, Jeff is, of course, Jeff Goodman, who is my usual co-host on this program. He's still in Thailand, hopefully having a ball. He'll be back next week, and also he'll be part of the WGBB Tony Award special that I'll be doing on June 14th from 7:30 to 10 p.m. on this station. It's really, really cool. We've got some great guests. We're going to have Tony nominee Daniel Breaker from Passing Strange is going to be on the show. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. Mark it on your calendar, Saturday night, 7:30, June 14th. For the Tony Award special. But anyway, getting back to Jeff Goodman, he is the owner and proprietor of Fancy Schmancy Balloons for all your party decorating needs. 516-797-3229 is the number. 3229 for balloon decorations, centerpieces on your tables, and also if you want to plan a party from scratch, he can hook you up with the other people who do stuff like DJing and photography. But his specialty is the look of the thing, the balloons, the archways, the centerpieces. Give Jeff a call, 797-3229, area code 516. But wait a couple of days until he's back from Thailand, and he'll get back to you. Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway, located at 1315 Broadway, right next to the defunct Lohman's Shoe Store. For weeks we were saying the new Lohman's Shoe Store. Now they couldn't make a go of it. They're out of business. They took the sign off the walls and off the front of it. So it's the desiccated, empty building that used to be Lohman's Shoe Store. Right near there is Hewlett Minuteman Press. And 10% off there for Dave's Gone By listeners on any job, big or small. Thanks also to Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, the Bible of Broadway, for 65 years. Everything you want to know about the stages of New York, Broadway, off, cabaret, opera, dance, they are all in the pages of Performing Arts Insider Magazine. And it's a really, really cool special. It's 12 issues a year that you guys can get for $10 a piece. It's $120 a year. Why is that so great? Because the normal price for non-Dave's Gone By listeners is $175. So you're saving a whole bunch of money just by listening to this show and just by subscribing to Performing Arts Insider. Find out more at PerformingArtsInsider.com or also at the website DaveIsGoneBy.org. Well, we've got so much to do with our good friend and guest Charles Bloom that we're just going to play one little bitty ad and then we'll get right to him. You're in for a treat. He's a really fun and articulate guy, and he writes fun and articulate songs too. So stick around for Dave's Gone By in Bloom. What's black and white and red all over? Photocopies made at Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. Any job that you have, including black and white copies, and they've got a brand new color copier, great quality, good prices, wonderful family that has owned Hewlett Minuteman Press since the 1970s. So check them out, 516-569-5577, Hewlett Minuteman Press. They're the kings. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and a little bit of nostalgia for me, particularly, on this episode of the show, because I'm talking to someone that I went to school with, going back, God help me, more than 20 years to my days at New York University, when I was taking all sorts of courses, mostly in film and television, but also trying to learn about the theater, because I began to love it so much. And I was taking an acting course in college, just because, not so much that I really wanted to be an actor, although if they cast me, I would have grabbed it and run, but just because it seemed like a really cool, fun 4 credits and a good way to deal with actors. And I think, actually, I took a directing course. It was more for direction, but we did some acting in it, too. Either way, it was a lot of fun, and one of my classmates in the course was a fellow named Charles Bloom, and we got along pretty well. We just had some kind of special rapport, maybe because we were the most talented men in the class. I think we were the only men in the class, which I kind of liked also. And we were very playful on stage, and we just had a lot of fun working together, and sort of kept in touch here and there, and have tried to angle our ways into the entertainment biz with varying levels of success. It isn't like, oh, Charlie got the big Broadway show, and now he's getting show after show and being wined and dined with his picture up at Sardi's, nor did I end up becoming the next Woody Allen, or which was my initial goal, or the next Neil Simon, which was my secondary goal, or even the next Joe Franklin, which I guess is my tertiary and final goal, which one day I might make, but we'll see. Anywho, it's really cool to have Charles Bloom with me in studio at WGBB. After all these years, still looking blonde. That's not gray hair. That's still blonde hair.
Depends where you look.
And this man, I will say, everybody in class was so impressed because you got the first real gig. We watched you. We saw you on Little House on the Prairie.
Oh,
am I right?
No. Now, the cat's out of the bag. The the dating me starts to starts.
Well, we never dated, but we.
No. Yes, I understand.
But well, you did. How did you get that? I mean, because you were still, my age, you were probably 19 or something. And
well, I had already had a, and by the way, hi, Dave. It's nice to see you again since the Reagan administration. Better to say that. Let them do the math on their own. Well, I had already had a slight acting career going even before the Little House on the Prairie. But even for 10 years after that, people would remember it. But it was after the acting career that I went to college, which led me to you.
Oh.
By the time I was in college, my acting had stopped because I went to NYU to study music formally. And what appealed to me about the school was its no-frills sort of atmosphere. There were no toga parties. There was no hazing. At least there wasn't to me. So I could go there, assimilate information, and then apply it in a professional marketplace.
Huh. Actually, I can't say that I missed toga parties or hazings or anything like that, but I did miss the idea of a campus. I did feel, as a commuter especially, that NYU was very cool in certain ways, but I never felt so connected to it the way people go away to school and there's these sprawling campuses and parties every weekend. And
I'm sure. There's appeal to that, particularly if you come from a certain upbringing, but for me, I just needed a place to go get information. I wanted to study music more formally.
And did that work? Did you learn it there? Did they really teach you well?
Yeah. In the way that any educational system can dispense information. It doesn't really change the way you end up expressing it artistically, but it's good to have more quivers in your bow, more technical knowledge so as to interpret it instinctively later on. But no, I'm very glad I went, and
good.
You know, I met you.
Well,
think of the advantages.
More important than anything. Yeah, there you go. So you get to be on this 1,000-watt radio station on Long Island 25 years later. Wow.
Babylon, I know. I was looking for the Hanging Gardens. I couldn't see them anywhere.
Yeah, you're a theater person. There we go. So you got out of NYU. And well, did you feel like me afterwards that, like, because I thought, okay, I've got my degree. And I came out of there with a master's, too. I stayed on after the undergrad for a master's in playwriting. And I thought, boom, okay, if I just keep doing my writing and being there and knowing all these people, something big will happen. And nothing big happened. And I'm wondering, did you feel that kind of landing on butterscotch pudding kind of feeling?
Well, it's mixed. There have been some... the trouble is I'm very hard on myself. So even though some people would look at the various things that I've done and say, you know, well, that's that's quite something, I tend to keep on pushing and be very unimpressed with anything less than, world domination. But over the past 20 years, my songs have been sung by all manner of people.
Oh, say some names.
Oh,
come
goodness.
On.
Are they going to drop out of the sky? Well, most recently, Christine Ebersole, who was in Grey Gardens last season, she heard a song of mine in a review called What's a Woman to Do, and via my orchestrator, and said, I want to demo that, and I said, well, then let's do it. Cheyenne Jackson from
Xanadu.
From Xanadu, right, and also United 93. He has a very large part in that, and is a spectacular in it. He's demoed two of mine. They're on my site right now. One is a country song called I Said It and I'm Proud, and another one called To See You Happy.
And by the way,
these people were just terrific. It's so nice when you're dealing with talented people because you know that you can give them the tools within the song, and then you have to kind of let it go and set them free for them to explore the mechanics of it so it doesn't seem... you just a distillation of your expression. It comes from them.
Actually, you mentioned that people can hear their versions of your songs on your website, which would be...
Drum roll, please. www.charlesbloommusic.com.
And it's one M in there, by the way.
Right, and that's the thing. It's one M, so which functions at the end of Bloom and at the beginning of music. So it's charlesbloommusic.com. Yeah. Or you can Google me, and it'll be there on the first page.
That may be the easier way if people forget. Cause
it's
like we're Charles Blue... Music or Charles Bloom Music. .com, right?
All roads lead to Rome with
one
M.
Charles' songs have also been covered by people like Barbara Walsh, who was in falsettos, and then that one about the English.
She was also in the recent revival of Company.
Yes, yes, of course.
And she sings a duet with one of her cast members from that show, Matt Cassel, and they sing a song called "Call Me When You're Single," something that people have listened to and found a great deal of identification with.
Cool.
I hang with good people. It helps.
Hello, Michael Feinstein. Good people.
Yeah,
what did he do?
Vicki Lewis.
Vicki Lewis. Andrea Markovici.
Yeah. It helps. So the question becomes, why haven't all these people, you know, with all these things, why hasn't there been a bigger clamor? And I guess the answer to that is sometimes it's luck. And sometimes it's I had no agent or I had no publisher. So there is no real active pipeline through which work of mine, you know, can get to where it needs to get on a larger scale.
Right.
I mean, it's played, by the way, it's played a lot on radio in Australia.
Aren't you going to Australia?
Yes. But in a larger view, I'm noticing that as tough as it is for me here, and it's getting better. Good things are coming up. We can talk about it.
Yeah.
But in Australia seems to have really embraced my stuff. It's played on the radio there almost every week.
You know, I think I know why. I think because there's an element in some way of the kind of music that you do and the kind of composer that you are, whatever this means to you, Peter Allen. They fathered him, they sired him, they created him. And you're working in some level in the same genre.
Some. Also, because they are later to the dance of musical theater, they are a little closer connected to traditional structures. I'm not the guy to give you a Spring Awakening. I deal more in classic. Well, depending who you ask, I say classical. Some people say old fashioned or traditional could be the mediating term. But they seem to warm up to it because I deal in things that are more melodic and that harken back to, when people talk about my stuff, they usually will compare it to Sondheim, Porter, Lesser, Coward, those sorts of people.
Hmm.
I have written some pop stuff, too.
Really? Well, you mentioned a country song that you had written, but
When you write this sort of stuff, you have to treat it like a good stock portfolio, diversify stylistically.
Sure.
So I have had my finger in a lot of different styles, which is all listed on the site, and it helps. It helps so that you just don't seem to be writing the same song over and over again.
Well, the reason you kind of dropped off my radar for a long time until, as we all do, I think, we start, hey, whatever happened to that person I went to school with? Whatever happened? And then, not that I was specifically looking, but news came about that you had been working on a show, writing a show called Pablo, about Pablo Picasso. That was really when...
Oh.
I was like, oh, Charles Bloom, my God, you know, the guy I went to school with. And then this was already a couple of years ago, and
uh-huh.
That seemed to be on at least an off-Broadway path, if not a Broadway one. Where are you at with that?
That show is definitely, Broadway, I think, beyond any shows you see, Broadway is the size of an idea. So your show has to be able to... So many times you go to a Broadway show, and there's that show that you're seeing down there, and it's this little thing going on. There are shows that make that mistake. But Broadway is a large-scale, big, fat, strapping period piece that is a blessing and a curse. But it's gone through 14 drafts, 6 workshops, a fully staged reading last November. Based on what I know today, it's going to have its first commercial production in March of next year at a place in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, called Clear Space Productions.
Okay.
But it's been through a lot of development, and as writers always seem to say after a workshop, I think that it's ready.
Mm.
It's just that it's tough. It's a big piece.
It's a big piece. So is it? So
yeah.
Big
it deals in his
Broadway.
Life between like 1899 and 1906, and concludes with his first commercial success. The show in a nutshell, is really almost about Picasso incidentally. It's really about any young person who is growing up in a dusty, hick town of Barcelona with dreams and hearing different things in his head who's misunderstood in his time. It applies to all sorts of things. You know, as he gets older, by the way, he's not really worth musicalizing as a personality. If you know the span of his 93 years, by the time he's 30, he's doing the posters for Stalin, and it's not a good person you want to put on stage. But as a kid,
right,
all that confidence, all that arrogance, I should say, is really translated as confidence, and he really does become a viable character in the confines of musical theater literature.
And plus, you can throw in Alice B. Toklas and Gertrude Stein, or is that too early for them?
Yes. yes, she has her solid, sedentary moment in the second act.
A song is a song is a song. You know?
It is the song she sings.
On June 14th, the night before the Tonys, catch the 4th Annual WGBB Tony Awards Special, hosted by Dave Lefkowitz, that's me, of Babes Gone By, co-hosted by theater critic Jeff Goodman and Michael Regal of the New York Post. We'll hear other critics make predictions, show tunes from Xanadu, Young Frankenstein, and more, quizzes, ticket giveaways, all on Saturday, June 14th, 7:30 to 10 p.m., the Tony Special on WGBB, the station that serves your theatrical community. We're talking with Charles Bloom in the neighborhood. He's a composer and lyricist for some hopefully Broadway-bound shows and also a lot of cabaret material for a bunch of famous people. And we've been asking him about how he works, but kind of wondering who your influences were. I mean, Sondheim, obvious, assumedly, but who else?
I tend to stick with the old guard. Like I mentioned earlier, different influence for different reasons. Sondheim, Coward, Porter, Lesser, as I said earlier, and Rogers too. It's all part of Bill Finn sometimes.
Okay.
But it's all part of. It's all a contribution to your eventual palette of expression. I think the thing about Sondheim, more so than just his work, because my work doesn't really sound like his, though people say that it does, because when anything is sophisticated, that's what your mind goes immediately.
Yeah.
But it's also from him, it's a passion. Devoting your entire life to a body of work, to a genre, you know, that's something I've always admired. In him and his work, and I have to say that over the decades, he has been occasionally supportive of my stuff, and I'm very grateful for his input.
Oh, cool! Yeah, I mean, as far as being very personally connected to him, I mean the shows and the composer lyricists that influenced your work just from your hearing them or growing up listening to them. Like, if you had to pick the best Broadway musical ever, it would be.
Oh goodness! See the thing is what's best. It's hard for me to answer questions like that, because I just don't. I think that a lot of shows have different things to offer, even if it's just a single song, you know. But I suppose Sweeney Todd is probably
one of
the great masterpieces, and as evidenced by how brilliantly it connected to film.
Oh, you know. Did you see that? I didn't see the movie.
Yeah, you must. I mean, and take away previous perceptions of Len Carreyrou and all that. It's a cinematic adaptation and all that goes along with that.
Right.
You know. I would say, you know, maybe let me mull on it some more. But that's the first one that comes to mind, just as a masterpiece.
Do you remember the first Broadway show you ever saw?
Dating me again. I believe it was Pippin. Pippin in the early 70s, right after that, the Candide, the revival of Candide, where they broke up the whole theater, which was unusual at that time. The one with Mark Baker and Victor Garber, I think, was in it.
Oh, okay.
Louis J. Spadlin was in it. It was at the Broadway Theater. Yes, that takes me back a little bit. But those were influential experiences early on.
Huh. And let's say over the past 5 or 10 years, can you pick a Broadway musical that left you completely like, wow, like this is what I want to do, or this?
Oh, I knew what I wanted to do before.
Well, no, I mean, I knew that, yeah.
But
reminded you of how great theater can be, because sometimes the contemporary stuff doesn't get the, you know what I'm saying.
That when I had that feeling that you get, and you don't get it very much these days, that I would say the Full Monty is the last time I saw a real full course show that didn't really rely on one or a couple of songs going in. I think the opening number alone to the Full Monty is absolutely masterful.
It's a really good score. Tony Yazbek. David Yazbek. And then he went ahead and did Dirty Rotten Scoundrels two seasons ago, which I thought was hysterical. People just didn't like that one as much, but I thought it was marvelous.
Oh, yeah. Well, he has a particular voice, and that's a good thing, and you have to know how to move away from it so you don't sound as much like yourself, in the second pass. But he's a very talented man.
The thing about being a Broadway composer, lyricist. Did you also do the book for Pablo?
I did.
Okay. But most of the time, it's just music and lyrics.
I would like future projects to be involving someone else in that capacity, but so far I've been doing it on my own.
Which means that you can't just work on one project, because if you do, everything takes 10 years to get to, well, unless you're Glory Days, but everything else takes forever to get. You've got to have 10 different shows percolating. These songs are working on for this person's specialty material on that cabaret singer. So what are the other projects that are really kind of popping for you?
It's called Career by Shotgun. It really is. You just keep on sending things, arrows in the air, and then 3 months later the phone rings and you try to pretend like you remember what you sent them. Another show of mine, Heaven Knows, had a fully staged reading just last February at the Fourth Wall Musical Theater in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Went very well. It's now really ready to be seen in town. It's fortunate to be able to have a New Haven, Connecticut, to have a place you can go and make some changes before it's seen in New York. Because, as the people in Glory Days and all of that, once you're seen here, that leaves an indelible impression on all that. So there's that. There are a lot of things. I mean, there's going to be a series of concerts of my stuff called Away With Words in Australia once again, done by a man named Will Conyers and some other people. That's going to be going later in the year.
Is there a difference between writing specific cabaret songs and writing songs for a show? A book kind of show?
A very good question, and something I didn't have the answer to right away, but I can tell you categorically that writing a linear score, which is just letting following a story, is easier than writing cabaret review material, because it's what I did. I didn't get this idea either, but I caught, when you're writing a cabaret review stuff, it's about the next joke. The audience isn't in possession of a fuller story on which they can pin certain understanding. It's just next line, next laugh, be funnier, I retain nothing. In a show, however, you have very, very much more narrow obligations. Case in point, briefly, the beginning of Pablo, which is just, as I thought, I remember thinking about this, thinking, God, all I need to do is write a song about him not liking Barcelona. That's it. I don't have to be clever. I just have to do that. And yes, that is the real cabaret songs are really about information. Information is divided by the geography of the room in which you present it. Something that which can be sung at the distance that we are, like about 6 feet away from each other.
Right.
That's what makes, among other things, but that's what primarily makes a good cabaret song. Hello, Dolly would be an example of a very bad cabaret song. It's just too presentational.
Huge.
It's just
too
rude. Yeah.
Unless, of course, Carol Channing is at some event and she has to change the lyrics again.
Yeah.
Hello.
Or change her undergarments, whatever she's changing.
Probably at this point just her lyrics.
But yes, it is. It's two very different disciplines, just like music writing and lyric writing are two different disciplines.
Well, yeah. Do you have a preference?
No. It's a. you know, you can't see what I'm doing with my hands on radio, but it's a, it's, they're parallel
He's
lines.
He's making a swimming sort, well, those were parallel, but also curvy.
That's, yeah, that's what it is. It's, they're both rewarding, music as an abstract, lyrics are a literal, and lyrics have to float on music like a lily pad, oh. That sort of thing. It has to be that sort of relationship. They're both difficult, but rewarding.
Mergers, lunches, late nights, skipping breakfast and frequent flights. Every morning it's a wake-up call to wake up. Then fearlessly I plan the daily plan. But the making of a living doesn't make up a man. There is more to dream about, and my excuses have all run out. The truth is my most valued acquisition. You cannot cuddle up with your ambition. Let the games begin. Let me risk my heart. I don't have to fish well, long as I can start. Let me be in no other place than by. Flickering from the fireside. Let me take a chance, even learn to care. Let me welcome the unknown, if you will lead me there. I want to let you in, and not just for. So let the games begin. I've come to play. Where's the sense in being sensible all the time? And if I once was not, I can't recall the time. So let my world be wrong and shaken to its core. Let me learn what loving means, but this time yearn for more. I've got to try before it is too late. So let the games begin, and let me make a start. For win or lose, I win. If I could just break
part. Waiting for heaven is what I do.
By Saul Solomon of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I personally invite you to watch my TV show, Shalom Dammit, Rabbi Saul Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour, every Wednesday and Friday morning at 7:30 on Cablevision Channel 115. If you've never seen a Jew before, this is your chance! Shalom Dammit, 7:30 Wednesday and Friday mornings, Channel 115, or in Manhattan, Channel 67, Sunday afternoons at 1:30, or anytime, anywhere on YouTube. Shalom Dammit! You have my blessing!
Hi, this is Charles Bloom. I'm a composer-lyricist from New York, and happy to be a guest on Dave's Gone By with Dave Lefkowitz on WGBB in Freeport.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. We are chatting with Charles Bloom, composer, lyricist, and old friend from my New York University days. I'm happy to see him looking good and working really hard.
Just time-honored.
And I didn't want to give the impression, especially at the beginning of the interview, that like, oh, well, we're slogging along and we're not successes and they're, well, maybe in my case, but you do what you do and what you're able to do full-time. Are you able to support yourself as an artist?
Well, I did for a while. I've had to dabble in some day jobs along the way, as everybody does. But, you know, there's no shame in paying bills. It's got to be done.
Not in this day. Yeah, in this day and age. Yeah,
know,
tell me about it.
It's fine. I've always, listen, I've written many songs on the selling floors of department stores, you know. It's happened. So I go back and forth with that. But, you know, I can't complain. My site is a great musical representation. I work with good people. And so it's really just a matter, as I'm reminded by very friendly friends, that as soon as the work gets out in the world as it should, good things will happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have been happening for a long time. I mean, you wouldn't be covered by the artists who are doing your songs already, if
right.
good things hadn't
it's
been happening.
The difference between that and the making a living at it in a proper sort of way. I'm right on the cusp of a lot of things. I think what needs to happen now, in brief, is to have a high-end sort of person do one of my numbers at one of those high-visibility events in New York, as has happened to several of my colleagues, so as to bring attention not only to that song, but also the other, you know, couple 300 that lie.
It just occurred to me, I mean, I'm surprised at this point that maybe one of the cabaret people that you know, not necessarily like the AAA plus Algonquin type people, but the Don't Tell Mama, at least, people, wouldn't do an evening of Charles Bloom songs.
It's been done. It was done at the Triad last year, just with the four people. A guy named Andrew Glant Linden directed it. So it's done, but it's not. And it's fine, and people had a very good time, but it wasn't reviewed, and it wasn't seen by a great many producers and all that. So, yes, I meet talented performers all the time. There's going to be a review in London later this year.
Oh, okay.
They just kind of, shall we say, discovered me as a group of West End performers. Just so happens they ran into my site, and so I shipped over about 125 songs over there just so they have like a little library.
Yeah.
And they're going to put together something among about half a dozen West End performers later this year. It takes that.
It's putting it together.
Yeah.
To call another
bit.
And by the way, you mentioned your site being charlesbluemusic.com or charlesbloommusic.com, where you can go to hear some versions of Charles Bloom's songs. Do you have any actual CDs out that you're selling on the site?
I can't sell them because of an agreement with the musicians where they're created. But yes, there are demo CDs that are fully orchestrated. And by the way, about the site, most computers have it, but you got to have Real Player to listen to the songs on the site. But you can download it if you don't have it. But yes, CDs do exist, and I've given them out for free at venues. I'm not really allowed to sell them. I could, but it wouldn't be a nice thing to do.
That's cool.
I share them with people as the opportunity arises.
Let's get personal, Charles.
Okay.
So,
couples only on the ice.
Are you attached? Are you unattached? Are you where? What's all that? What's that been since? Oh, NYU days.
Oh, I'm afraid I'm better at life inside music than out. I wish I could tell you how that's been an easy part, but no, I've been single mostly all my life, and I would enjoy changing that status. Should the right situation happen, I've tried to change it in the past on a few occasions, but there's been no fruit born from those efforts. But hope springs eternal, and we shall see what walks into my life. But I don't go to the batter's box that often. I mean, I'm not the sort of person that can you know, date lots of people at one time and just fling off people. My nature is really romantic.
Oh. But kind of a Howard Sterny question. Are you bat lefty or righty or from both sides? Are you a switch hitter, as it were?
I don't know what you mean.
You know exactly what I mean. I didn't know back at NYU. I had no clue.
I've been writing theater music since I was 16 years old. What do you think?
I wanted to get into this just briefly.
That's all right. God,
but what happened was two things happened.
It's Mother's Day. My mom is listening, and she doesn't mind am I saying anything. It's all right.
So, well, first of all, I thought we were both lusting after the same girl in class. I'm not going to mention her name, but there was this really beautiful woman, and I thought maybe you would just somewhat closeted at that point, and we were kind of bonding in a certain way because you didn't know which way I was going. And I was like, and I assumed we were both not making ugly kind of construction worker comments, but we'd both see her and be like, woof.
Really? Wow. I don't know. I'm delighted that I had that in me at that time. It was probably because I was in New York I was much younger for the first time, and I wanted to blend in, and, you know, it was also the early 80s.
But then that shocked me because we did a scene for the instructor, the director, who was a pretty good guy. And it was a comedy scene, and it was some kind of press conference thing, and I was playing a mayor, or I don't even remember what I was playing. And you came up, and you were asking a question. You were playing, like, one of the members of the press or some audience member asking a question. And it was a very, very out there, very effeminate character. And we're doing it for comedy for the most part. And the instructor was not happy with it at the end. And he said, why are you doing it? It's a very, very kind of stereotypical character. You're doing shtick. You're not really doing something real, performing that.
This is and it was criticizing been, what I
yeah,
was doing?
Yeah.
Oh, he was fired probably soon thereafter.
No, because you were really laying it on thick. And it would be something that I would assume a person of that wouldn't do, unless, because they might find it stereotypical to put that out there, or if they were not that, then, you know, they wouldn't think that it would be perhaps offensive or perhaps just too flamboyant to be funny. Although I thought it was pretty funny.
I would try to. I don't remember what it is you're talking about,
okay,
but
cool.
I would try to instill some sort of authenticity, no matter how stereotypical the characterization is.
Well, it was like a 3-minute bit. It wasn't like we weren't doing a 90-minute O'Neill play.
Well, O'Neill plays could use with more flamboyance.
Yeah.
I've never really been one for. To approach something stereotypically or saying a lot of stock phrases or, misusing my pronouns, that sort of thing. I've never been that sort of gay man, which is probably, why I've remained single. Who knows? So I'll call me when I'm single.
Well, by the way, man, he's still very good looking. He's still got a head of hair. Well, he's a blonde guy. I think there are pictures on your website.
There's a picture on the site, yes. My Dorian Gray shot.
And you're definitely tanned, which, you know, I've never been. You've got the, well, because I guess
I don't look like a theater composer. I'm not respectable than Kurt Vile. People, when they meet me, they think, oh, you look like, you know, Ron Howard, or you look like, you're corn-fed.
You're on Little House on the Prairie, for gosh sakes, but we're very, very happy to have Charles Bloom in the neighborhood. So, Charles, over the next, yeah, sorry.
When you said, that when you talked about the sexuality thing, and I read your show's title, Dave's Gone By.
B-Y.
Okay, all right. I'm sure it's been said before. But
a zillion times.
It was cause for concern.
Yeah. No concern. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but as the Seinfeld people would say. Now, just give me a quick glimpse for the last question for Charles Bloom of, like, the next 3 or 4 weeks. What are you going to be doing? Like, from day to day, like, what concerts, what things, what are you mailing out, what are you working on, who are you collaborating with, who's doing your stuff, where you're flying to, all of that.
I am recording a new song on Thursday to be demoed for, among others, Cheyenne Jackson, a new song entitled Sounds Like a Plan. I'm telling you, I finished it yesterday, and I'm very happy with it. I think it will have a life, again, if it's heard by the right people. So that is being done Thursday. Shortly thereafter, I'm going to be planning my itinerary for this trip to Australia, a different one that I mentioned. An educator by the name of Dr. Kevin Purcell heard my work, met me in New York, and is going to be flying me out for 3.5 weeks next year to teach and lecture and conduct master classes and critique shows and to be treated by this kind of visiting dignitary. I'm very flattered to, you know. Particularly some of the other people who are going at different times, you know, Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty are going, Michael John Lacusa are going, to be alongside this kind of group is quite surprising.
You're the wunderkind down under. Thank you.
Insert joke. Those are the two things that are coming up right now that I'm aware of.
Well, I wish you best of luck with that. I want to see you. I don't know if I want to see your stuff on Broadway so quick because I'm afraid, you know.
We better hurry.
Off Broadway. Let's get you off Broadway first and then have it be a hit and then have it gravitate to Broadway instead of opening Cold on Broadway. Let that happen.
Well, let it be in the right place. The only show I've ever written that was right for Broadway was Pablo. My two other shows, Heaven Knows and Insomnia, and a new one called Character Breakdown, which, by the way, has just been optioned in London.
Sounds like my life, yes.
These are, you know, chamber pieces, you know.
Okay, so off-Broadway. Yeah. Vineyard, either Theater Workshop, if they survive, you know.
Either one.
Cool.
I'd be okay with it. It's so good to see you, David.
Likewise, Charles. Best of luck, best in everything, and keep making the music. That's all that counts. Keep making the music.
Keep scribbling.
To conceal when both of us feel a lot. It's silly to stall the magic of all we've got. We know it is wrong, we know what is wise. We'll play by the book, but look in our eyes. The passion is clear, the timing I feel.
My whole life have I made a mess. I'll call you.
Crazy busy.
I will call you when I'm single.
Whether you're at the very beginning, the middle, or the end of the Broadway season, everything you need to know about Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance is in the pages of Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, available 21 times a year or just in the monthly edition. Either way, Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off. So subscribe now to Performing Arts Insider and find out all the information at PerformingArtsInsider.com.
I'll make it easier for you.
Hey, all you swinging hep cats, hep kittens, and HEPA filters, have I got a cool book for you. It's called Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. It's published by Holbo Books, and it's got a bunch of comedies in there by Dave Lefkowitz, the host of Dave's Gone By. I think you'll find them funny, so cats and kittens, give it a look. Dave'sGoneBy.org is the cool place to go for Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World.
Hi, this is Dennis Stamp, author of the Book of U.S. Government Jobs, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB Radio in Freeport.
Dave's Gone By. Dave's Gone By.
Thank you, Dave J., for that that lovely song, that interstitial music. That's the only word I can think of for it, and it's kind of neat. And he also does that. There goes the neighborhood bit in the very, very beginning. I want to thank David J. For doing that. Anyway, before we get to our final stuff for the evening, have a couple of minutes here, and want to do a segment called Dave Says By, as opposed to Dave's Gone By. Dave Says By is spelled B-Y-E, because it's where we bid farewell to some folks that we lost in the past few days. And we lost two pretty talented people, I think, in this past week, including Sidney Pollack, who died this past Monday, May 25th. He was 73 years old, cancer. And it's so weird because that came as a bit of a shock to me. I just saw for the first time the film Michael Clayton, because we had shown it at our local library. So I know, I realize the film came out already well over a year ago, but to me, it's a very recent film. I just saw it, and then I get the news that Pollack died of cancer, and you don't think of cancer being a, kind of an overnight thing. But anyway, Pollack certainly has given the world quite a few moments to remember on film, and quite a few wonderful films. I mean, ironically enough, the one movie that got him an Oscar, that may be his most famous film, as it were, was Out of Africa, and I was always bored to hell with that film. But some of the other stuff that he did were just really good, watchable films. 3 Days of the Condor, The Interpreter was pretty darn good. For Romantic People, The Way We Were, of course, The Electric Horseman, and we all talk, two of the best films, really, Absence of Malice, that's the one with Sally Field, and You Can't Help But Love Tootsie. I don't know if it really stayed as wonderful as it seemed to be 20-odd years ago when it first came out, and we realized just how special Bill Murray was. This was, of course, before he was a drunken, drug-addicted wife-beater and sex addict and all that stuff. But no, back then he was just kooky Bill Murray from Saturday Night Live, and we realized that he could do amazing work in movies. And then, of course, the magic, the chemistry of Charles Durning and Justin Hoffman and Jessica Lange and Sidney Pollack in the role. My favorite moment in Tootsie belonged to Sidney Pollack, and it was a role he didn't want to take. All the newspapers printed this in the obits for Pollack, that Hoffman begged him to play the role of Michael Dorsey's agent, the agent who keeps trying to send Dorsey out for for jobs, for commercials, for films, for theater. And Dorsey is such a problematic actor and so ridiculously difficult that the agent's just washing his hands of him and can't tolerate him anymore. And Hoffman said, please, 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 you've got to play the agent. You're just so right for it. And Pollock finally agreed. And that was the last thing the two of them agreed upon, because from then on, they fought like cats and dogs throughout the entire film about what the film should be. It should be dark and kind of serious and a romantic love story kind of thing, and also this personal thing about women and how tough it is to be a woman in society, or should it just be more of a farcical pre-Mrs. Doubtfire thing? Whatever they did, it worked. And it became a lovely film. And as I said, whether it works as beautifully today as it seemed to so many years ago, I don't know. I haven't sat through the entire film again in many, many years. But I like to think so. I like to think that it paved the way for a film that wasn't just a bunch of Saturday Night Live people doing two passes on a script, getting a zillion million dollars and a few tubs of cocaine to make the film. And boom, there you had a kind of a funny comedy with a few good bits. This felt like an A film. It was meant to be a really good movie that happened to be funny. And that's the special thing about Tootsie. And that special scene I wanted to tell you about, which we all remember. Dorsey is up against his agent, and the agent is saying, look, I can't send you out on anything anymore because you just argue with all the directors, and you can't do the job, and they can't come in on budget with you. And they're specifically talking about a commercial. It's either about ketchup or vegetables or something like that, and Dorsey was to play a tomato. And Dorsey said, look, I couldn't do the role properly because I didn't know my motivation. What kind of tomato was I? What was I supposed to be? What was I supposed to be doing in my time on screen? And Pollock, the steam coming from his ears, just said it in that perfect way. You're a tomato! It was the way he said it funnier than I did. It was just the right way to say it. Maybe he got it in one take. Maybe it took 12, as that film probably did. But that is my great moment of seeing Sidney Pollock. And he was a good actor, for whatever his directing prowess. If you saw him in Michael Clayton, there is a special quality, a very natural, personable way about him and what he did. Go see Husbands and Wives, the Woody Allen film, where he plays what starts to be a comic role. He's this husband who falls out of love with his wife of many, many years and goes chasing after this young girl, and they have this great little affair, this fling, this wild sex. She's like 20 years old, and then he gets tired of her. And he gets so mean. It is so frightening the way he treats her, and so real that you realize, my God, this guy could do anything. What a special actor. Even quietly playing against his 6-foot frame and his natural ability to be loud and Jewish, like some of us I won't mention. Anyway, speaking of loud and Jewish, also want to say farewell to Harvey Herschel Korman, born in 1927, died at age 81 this week, 4 months after he suffered a pretty bad aneurysm. He started, I didn't realize this, as a sidekick on a Danny Kaye television show. And that led, of course, to the Carol Burnett show, and also his role that we all remember him for, as well as Hedley Lamarr in Blazing Saddles and a bunch of Mel Brooks movies. I will say he's underappreciated. It bothers me in the obituaries and things on the web now that they're calling Harvey Korman a comic genius. He was not a comic genius. Not everybody who dies automatically becomes a comic genius when they were alive and working. Well, certainly not the people who were physicists and teachers and lawyers, but even the comedians and the comic actors, they could have just been really talented and very, very good at what they did. If you wanted to look at the Carol Burnett show, Tim Conway was the comic genius. Harvey Korman was the talented foil, and it was also probably the most fun thing that he did was break up in laughter watching the comic genius of Tim Conway. But together, it worked, and they created some terrific television moments. And for that, we will miss Harvey Korman. Well, it's 12:01 a.m. here in the neighborhood at WGBB Freeport. Got to do a little commercial business, and then we'll be back with the end of Dave's Gone By. Eat, use, buy. look at me. I'm the American consumer, and I want to spend my money on stores, restaurants, showrooms, travel agencies, mail order catalogs. Sell me stuff. How do you reach me? Well, I listen to Dave's Gone By. So if you advertise there, you'll certainly have my attention. Dave'sGoneBy.org has all the details, or email Dave'sGoneBy@AOL.com for the rate card. I'm listening. Sell me what you got. Fine wine, great books, priceless antiques. All that's missing is something to listen to. But of course, episodes of Dave's Gone By, the music, the comedy, the perceptive talk, entire shows preserved on compact disc. Any episode you choose, just $11, shipping included. No home is complete without Dave's Gone By on CD. So visit davesgoneby.org because you're worth it.
Hi, this is Charles Bloom, and you are listening to Dave's Gone By with Dave Lefkowitz on WGBB in Freeport. And indeed, the best things in life are Freeport.
Now, the best things in life are being able to do a radio show in Freeport. Well, actually Babylon, but we call it Freeport. Or is it actually Freeport and we call it Babylon? Something like that. Anyway, best things in life are being able to talk to people, talented, cool people like Charles Bloom. And I thank him so much for being in the neighborhood this week. I thank you all for listening. Thanking the sponsors, Hewlett-Mann Press, the copy kings of Broadway. 569-5577 is their number, area code 516. 10% off all jobs, big or small, for Dave's Gone By listeners at Hewlett-Mann Press. 569-5577. Also, if you got your pencils out, remember that number for Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 797-3229, 797-3229, area code 516, for all your party decorating needs. And this one you don't need a pencil for. Just go on the web to performingartsinsider.com and find out how you can get 12 issues of the most important journal magazine about Broadway, off-Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance that there is out there today, Performing Arts Insider. And you can get it for just $10 an issue, whereas the newsstand price is $15. So it's a really nice savings. Go to performingartsinsider.com. I want to remind everybody that Rabbi Saul Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour, Shalom Damn It, airs Wednesday and Friday mornings on Channel 115 on Long Island Cablevision, and New York viewers in Manhattan can see him on Sunday afternoons at 1:30 on Channel 67, and that's you can also watch that at mnn.org at 1:30 on Sundays, and every episode of The Rabbi is on YouTube.com. Just look for Saul, S-O-L, Saul Solomon. And, yes, you can get demented with him there. Anyway, if you want to get demented with me and tell me what you think of the show, please write to me at davesgoneby@AOL.com. D-A-V as in Victor, E-S, gone by, and as I told Charles, it's by@AOL.com. And for more information about this program, go to davesgoneby.org. That's also the place where you can find out how to listen for free to a bunch of older episodes of the show. They're both at the radio station website and connected to my own, davesgoneby.org. Let's see, listen for Filler Up on this radio station, WGBB. Go to AM 1240, WGBB.com. Look at the schedule, and you'll see a show called Filler Up. And that's a program I also host on here, just of music. I shut my mouth a little bit, and I play really, really cool, eclectic music for a half hour. It's called Filler Up on WGBB. Well, I thank Charles Bloom already. I wished Jeff Goodman great times in Thailand. He will be back, God willing, next week. I want to thank Mom and Dad Lefkowitz for being so wonderful all the time, and my absolutely adorable and wonderful wife, who had to call in when commercials were playing to say that I should not have said what I said about being one of the two only men in the theater class that was all the rest women, and how wonderful that was. I should only wish to be around other men because I'm married and I have the most perfect and beautiful wife in all of world history. And she's right. Not that I really want to be surrounded by men all the time. That's a little freaky to me, but she watches the Logo Channel so much, I guess that's I guess she's being overly influenced by that. But anyway, there, honey, I said it on the air, and I'm proud. Coming weeks, we've got some cool people on the show, including the satirist Bruce Kluger, returning to the program to talk about his new book, Young Dick Cheney, just a couple more weeks in the Bush administration, so let's kick him while he's down, and the producer and director of that classic-y, culty film, The Lords of Flatbush, Stephen Verona, going to be on the program, and we've got some other special people planned for you as well. And gosh, don't forget, Sunday night, June 14th, 7:30 p.m., it's the Tony Awards special, fourth annual on the radio station. I'll be hosting. Jeff Goodman and the New York Post writer, Michael Riedel, will be co-hosting. We've got Daniel Breaker of Passing Strange. He's a Tony nominee. He'll be part of it. We're expecting Linda Weiner, the critic for Newsday, in there, the president of the Avid Critics Circle, Simon Saltzman, and music and giveaways. It's going to be amazing. Saturday night, June 14th, 7:30 on WGBB. Well, I've got to leave WGBB now because the gospel people are here, so although I'm leaving the neighborhood now, I will be back next Sunday, June 8th, 2008, with a 276th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you good night, and as Ron DeStefano sings in this Charles Bloom composition, never give up and gone by.
Never give up, that's my rule. Okay, you give it a try. They say you're out of your league, but maybe later you'll have them thinking twice. So never give up, my advice. Don't give me that I can't do it. I've heard it before, don't give me that help me through. But when you say no,